Welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call Podcast. As always, I am your host, Søren Otto, and today I am joined by the great fixed income expert, Althea Spinozzi. Hi, Althea, how are you doing?
Hi, Søren. I'm joining this call from Italy, but the weather is not as pleasant here. Rainy and cold.
Oh, no. And was it correctly understood? We just had a talk, obviously, before we start recording, that you were from your hometown called Domodossola or something like that?
Correct. A very small town on the border with Switzerland. So very happy to be here for the Easter holidays.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I can say that I'm also, just like with the last episode with Charu, I am coming to you from the west coast of Denmark. And I can actually tell that for once it's sunny here. So maybe we're enjoying better weather than you are, but I'm sure that's going to change.
The food here is much better, right?
That is for sure. And I recently tasted some of the limoncello you have down there, and that is also pretty great, I have to say.
Absolutely.
But maybe we should do a food episode at some point, but not today, Althea, because you are, as I said, as always, our fixed income expert. And that also means that fixed income is going to be what we're talking about today. And I think that is very much due because last week we had a lot of central bank meetings that obviously are very relevant for the fixed income or bond market. So I wanted to get your take on what was the most important movements there, because it was a quite interesting week. We saw both in terms of Switzerland, Japan, and obviously also the FOMC meeting from the US. And I think that's where I want to start, Althea. We had the FOMC meeting and Powell was out speaking. We aren't seeing any rate cuts yet, and it seems like June is the most realistic one. Also because, as we've talked about numerous times, also with Charu, they don't want to get too close to the US election in November before they start cutting rates. But what happened in the bonds market, and how did they react to the FOMC meeting?
Oh, well, the bond market last week reacted like Powell was about to cut rates already in May. But that sentiment has been boosted by what was happening in Europe, because in the same week we had the Swiss National Bank that cut rates. And this is the first main developed country central bank cutting rates. And obviously there is this feeling that is opening up for other central banks to begin cutting rates. And that's bullish for bonds. But when we dive in and we really look at the summary of economic predictions that were issued just before the press conference, we can see that the revisions made, the economic revisions made in this report, were actually hawkish. We had the revision of US upward revisions of the US GDP for 2024, 2025, and 2026. So basically, during the December summary of economic projections, growth was seen to rise 1.4% in 2024. Now it's seen rising at 2.1% throughout all the year. That's above trend. And in 2025 and 2026, the US GDP is seen to grow 2%. But there was not only upward revision in growth, but also in core PCE. Core PCE was revised up for 2025. Previously was forecasted to end the year at 2.4% and now at 2.6%, while it was unchanged for 2025 and 2026. The unemployment rate was also revised downwards for this year. But anyway, it stays around 4%. So within the long-term unemployment rate that the Federal Reserve is seeing. There was some major point actually for bond market, which was shown by the dot plot during the in the summary of economic projections, which is for the first time since January 2020, the long-term neutral rate is seen rising above 2.5%, towards 2.6%, and there was one less cut in 2025. So this is the first sign that we get after a very long time that maybe interest rates are going to remain higher for longer, exactly as policymakers have been telling us in the past months.
So really, is it correct to say that one of the main thing or major things that happened with this FOMC meeting was that maybe the market and the expectations from the Fed got a little bit closer to each other. There has been some divergence there in the last few years.
I would say that this meeting, the FOMC meeting of last week, was the typical act hawkish, sound dovish kind of meeting, which policymakers are really good at doing. Because after this kind of hawkish revision in the summary of economic projections, Powell really played it dovish. He basically highlighted that the Federal Reserve is still looking to cut rates three times this year, and well, he tried to underplay also the quantitative tightening, the tapering of the quantitative tightening. But even these remarks that he made on quantitative tightening were hawkish. Because he said we are going to taper quantitative tightening sooner than the market is expecting. And I will explain you why, Soren. I believe that quantitative tapering is a quantitative tightening tapering is happening probably already in May. But he said that the reason why they are going to taper QT is just because they want to ensure a longer run of unwinding of positions, which is bad for long-term issuance. And this is a key point that I would like to explain, Soren. So
Please
the
do.
reason why the Federal Reserve is looking to taper QT is because starting from June this year, there is not enough coupon notes and bonds that are maturing that are enough to hit the 60 billion QT cap. So if there is not enough coupon bonds and notes to run off from the Fed balance sheet, all of a sudden the Federal Reserve will need to start to run off T-bills. But the problem that the Federal Reserve has is that the reverse repo facility now has dropped below $500 billion, dollars, and is afraid that once that the reverse repo facility is going to be drained, then the level of ample reserve is going to hit sooner rather than later. And that can create a liquidity event in money markets. And the Federal Reserve wants to avoid that. So there are a couple also of elements that we need to tackle here. What is the level of ample reserves, and when exactly the reverse repo facility is going to hit zero? There are several reports that suggest that the RRP is going to be drained sometimes in summer. And there is a report that has been published from the St. Louis Fed that says that ample reserves are between 10 to 12% of the US GDP. And that takes us between 2.9 to 3.3 $1 trillion in bank reserves at the Federal Reserve, right? Right now, bank reserves are at 3.5 trillions. So it means that once that the RRP is done in summer, and the Federal Reserve at the same time accelerates the running off of T-bills, that level of 3.3 trillions of bank reserves might be hit soon and could provoke volatility in money markets. And that's why the Federal Reserve wants to taper and wants to tackle only coupon bonds, while probably wants to increase the share of T-bills. I hope it was clear, Soren, because I know it's a very technical thing, but that's the reason why the Federal Powell is not saying that they want to taper QT and because they want to ease the economy. They want to taper QT because they see stress emerging from money markets.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting, and I think maybe we should do sort of a special episode about. I know you've been talking a lot about this reverse repo facility, at least, and as you say, it is very technical, and I think a lot of people could definitely use a deep dive into that to fully understand it. But as I understand it, what you're saying is that basically the Fed is trying to say that they're prepared to do very harsh things without trying to do too harsh things to control the economy, to basically let the market know that they're ready to act, but that they want to do as little as possible, not to stir up the waters, and that's also why they want to focus on this quantitative tightening tapering. That's a very difficult word to say. I think we need to
Yes.
find a new word for that. Is that more or less the correctly understood and very simplified, of course?
Yes, absolutely. So basically, what the Federal Reserve is telling us is that they are going to cut three times and they are going to taper quantitative tightening. Obviously, the headlines are very dovish, but when you open up the box of actually what they want to do, it's quite hawkish. And the bigger question mark is actually, are they going to be able to deliver three rate cuts when they expect US GDP to remain above 2% for this year and inflation to remain in the high twos? There was yesterday Bostic, a Federal Reserve member, saying that actually it doesn't envision more than one rate cut this year. So there is a lot of dispersion at the Federal Reserve, and we are walking a very fine thread. I think that the message is definitely more dovish in Europe concerning central banks than in the US, but it's very important to look out also what happens in the US, because if the US is not able to engage into interest rate cuts as it is forecasted in the dot plot, that can also create a floor for central banks in Europe to cut rates.
For sure. And now let's jump to Europe and have a quick look, or well, close to Europe at least, because I think we should talk about the UK as well. They also had a meeting last week, and I know that it's something that a lot of people are paying attention to, especially with this semi-correlation to Europe. Could you just outline what happened? What was the main takeaways from their meetings, and how the bond markets reacted to the Bank of England meeting?
So in this meeting, there was not a press conference. But what was interesting and the reason why it was dovish is the Monetary Policy Committee voting distribution showed that there are not any more hawks. So basically, while in February, two members voted to hike rates, this time in March, eight members voted to hold rates and one voted to cut rates. So it's pretty clear that the next move of the Bank of England is not the one of hiking rates, but is going to be the one of cutting rates. And that comes together with a faster disinflationary trend in the UK, because we had several CPI metrics this month, including core CPI and headline CPI, that showed that inflation is dropping faster than the market is expecting. And also wages, although they remain very high, around 5.6% and around 6.1% excluding bonus, they also dropped faster than what the market was expecting. So definitely that is a dovish sign, but investors should be still cautious, because now the market is pricing three interest rate cuts from the Bank of England by the end of the year. And we just had one of the Bank of England members, Mann, this morning, being out and saying that there might not be three interest rate cuts. So also here, I think that what is going to happen in the Bank of England is going to be pretty much data driven, and expectations for economist consensus is for inflation to drop below 2% already in the second quarter of the year. But depending on what happens also in the US and the US dollar, the Bank of England will be more or less willing to cut rates later during the year, because obviously they would want to avoid energy inflation to rise again at this point in time.
That is for sure something that we're going to pay attention to, because it is interesting to see how close the UK gets to moving along the lines of the rest of the EU. But another country which you are actually quite close to at the moment is Switzerland, who also had a meeting last week. And they actually, as the first major central bank, decided to cut rates last week. What was the market reaction to that, and why did they do it? As you see it.
Well, the reason why Switzerland cut rates is that they didn't really have an inflation problem. Actually, inflation is well below 2%. The headline CPI is around 1.2%. So they had to cut rates, but they didn't so because they didn't want to devalue the Swiss franc. But basically the sign that it gives is that they probably rates are too high at in Europe as well, especially for the ECB, and maybe it's time for the ECB to cut rates too. And we had several ECB members out last week and also this week saying that interest rate cuts are coming faster than expected. So it might be that the next interest rate cuts at the ECB is going to arrive at the next meeting before the Federal Reserve is going to cut rates. That argues for an extension of duration in the euro area more than in the US, obviously, because if we have central banks in Europe and also in the UK cutting rates, then we will see a steeper yield curve, and the long part on the yield curve will benefit the most due to their high sensitivity to the interest rates. But I want to underline a very hot topic here, Soren. Is this the moment then to go and buy ultra long securities? So those securities with a maturity of 20 year plus, and in Europe, we have a very extreme examples. We have the Austria 100 century bonds. We had France, also issuing 50 years bonds in other countries. And well, that's still a risky trade, and the reason is that the cutting cycle is definitely going to begin sometime in the near future, but nobody knows how much interest rate cuts can these central banks deliver, because if they deliver too much, then their currency will suffer, and that will bring back inflation, energy inflation, or everything that we have out there, commodities, they are quoted in dollars. So if we have a weak euro, it definitely create inflation, not only for energy but also for products.
All right, thank you so much, Althea. And yeah, I think that's a good point on the ultra long maturities and something that you've been pounding the table for quite some time about. I think it's a very good point, and you've also written about it on our website. So check that out, hope.saxo, and go to inspiration if you want to check out more of Althea's work. Before we close, and I think we should get going soon because time is flying. The Bank of Japan has been well, they raised the rates out of negative territory, 10 basis points last week as well, which was probably the biggest media story. We've also spoken about it at length, also with Charu, especially in the special episode last week. So if you want to go and check that out, feel free to do so. But from a fixed income perspective, did that move the needle in any way, or was that more or less a non-event in your area of the financial world?
Well, the implications of the Bank of Japan abandoning yield curve control and also negative interest rates is vast. But we didn't see much repercussions as of last week in foreign markets. So I'm talking more like about US Treasuries, European sovereign bonds. But I believe that it's something that we are going to see playing out slowly and in the next few months. The reason it's fairly simple. If Japanese investors can benefit from positive interest rates in Japan, they are going to be less willing to invest abroad. And the biggest example is when we look at the 10-year Japanese government bonds trading around 0.7%. Well, Japanese investors that are willing to buy US Treasuries around 4.2%, they will need to lock in a loss of minus 1.2% once that they hedge this position against the Japanese yen. And the problem we are having is that if the Federal Reserve remains the most hawkish central banks in town, because it's not able to cut rates as it's saying, or as aggressively as other central banks, the US dollar will remain strong, and probably the Bank of Japan will not be able to keep up in terms of strengthening the Japanese yen. So when you convert these positions back into Japanese yen, it would be you basically can record a loss, and that's obviously a slow burning kind of scenario that is going to play out in the next few months. And that's why, Soren, I always focus and look at U.S. Treasury auctions, and I really want to see in direct bidders if they're dropping considerably in certain part of the US yield curve, because that could be a sign that foreign investors are buying less of these securities, which is bearish for US Treasuries, but also for European sovereign bonds, which are pretty much dependent on the bid that they get from Japanese investors.
Okay, so just a very a final point before we close this one out, Althea, is that if you were to look at the most interesting bond market right now, is that then the U.S. Treasury market that you are going to pay attention to?
Well, depends what you mean interesting. Interesting because of volatility, or interesting in terms of investment?
Probably the latter.
Okay. So in terms of investment, I find that all the bond markets interesting, because If we look at the absolute yield that these securities are offering, is among the highest that we have seen in more than a decade. So definitely, when I look at bonds, for example, we didn't see bonds at 2% for so long. They provide now a good yield, and also in terms of risk reward, they are appealing. So if we take the 10 years tenors on in all geographic areas, so I'm talking about the Eurozone, US, and also the UK, we will see that if you lock in 10-year US Treasuries at around 4%, well, if you're expecting to hold this position for at least 1 year, and within this year rates go to 5.2%, you're going to lose only 3%. But if they drop to 3.2%, you are going to make 12%. So, absolutely appealing a kind of a risk and reward ratio that is great in a very well diversified portfolio. When you look in the front part of the yield curve, that's the hottest part that we have in fixed income markets, because there is almost no chance to lose money. You see, 2 years, the 2 year tenors can have needs to rise more than 150 basis points within a year in order to provide a loss in a portfolio. So it's a great hedge against a market downturn, and it can be used also to park money.
All right, there you have it. I think that was everything for today. Althea, thank you so much for making us all a little bit smarter today and joining us. And have a very nice Easter down in Italy. I hope for a better weather for you as well.
Thank you. We'll try not to eat too much.
That sounds like a good plan. As we mentioned, it is Easter week, and that also means that the programming is a little bit different than usual. That means that this will be the last episode for this week, and since Easter is running into next week too, we will also be hit by some programming disruption there, and we will probably not be back until Wednesday or Thursday, unless something big happens. Then, of course, we will be right here at the same place at the Saxo Market Call. But then I don't think there's anything more for me to say than on behalf of Althea Spinozzi, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Søren Otto. Thank you so much for listening. And as I said, we will be back anytime soon. And until then, happy trading.